Annalisa Munro has always been somebody who has inspired me and fascinated me in the art world. And as the curator under the Aegis and as part of the art ecosystem of South Africa, she really plays a huge role. So when she decided to curate the show Klop Klop and gave me access to two of the artists in the collective who did the exhibition, I was super happy to chat to them about identity. Let's start off, because I'm very excited about this particular exhibition. I remember Annalisa Munro telling me about it, and I was like, yes, it's for my people, Klop Klop, away. Tell me firstly about yourselves, because this was done by a collective of artists. So tell me about yourselves.
My name is Shakil Taufi. I am a filmmaker and director. The essence of the work that I do, I think, speaks to who I am as a person. It speaks to colored identity, and it speaks to my ancestors. I think for the most part, what I think is a big point in my ability to tell stories and the importance and the emphasis that I put on storytelling is having the right voices tell the right stories. And I think that's what's carried through into Klop Klop. It's what's carried through into all the work that I do as an artist and a filmmaker, and it's the message that we try to pass on to people like us.
Cool. My name is Faiz Taufi. So this is my brother, Shark. So as you can tell, I work as a creative director for the most part in the film world, but now also the art world, which is quite fun. So a lot of what Shaq said, I feel similarly, where I want to tell the stories that I know. I want to see our stories on the walls that in these types of spaces. So we approach a lot of our work in general and from a space of what do I know and how does it make me feel and why am I not seeing it in those spaces? How do we make sure that our stories are in there and our people are seeing it? And I think that's the important thing with all the work that we do and that we do across our films, across our art, across all the mediums that we work in.
I think also when you speak about colored identity, for me, it's something that's kind of come up in the media. I mean, that ridiculously ghastly podcast episode where they spoke about colored people. And for me, I agree with you. You know, we have to also tell our stories or else other stupid people, and I'll say stupid, will tell it for us. What does it mean to you to be colored?
To me, it just means expression. And I think, again, our debut solo exhibition speaks to a lot of our values as colored people. It speaks to joy. It speaks to love. It speaks to this tender riot almost of defiance, but a bold sense of expression. So being colored to me is a very complex thing, but at the same time, I see it as expression. I see it as defiance, and I see it as something that I am proud to be called.
I think a lot of colored identity is often, I know when I speak to a lot of colored people about identity specifically, it almost feels like we're grasping at these intangible things often, whereas a lot of other cultural groups have things that feel much more tangible in heritage. So I think when someone asks me, what does it mean to be colored? The first thing I always go to is, how do I feel when someone says, like when I say I'm colored? And the first word that came up when I was making the show, when we were making the show was, I feel a lot of joy. Colored people know joy, colored people know laughter, and that is what is being colored to me, is this innate joy of my community around me. And that was the essence that I feel like when someone asks you, what is coloredness? Coloredness to me is joy. Coloredness is my everyday, it's how I live, and I choose to live with joy, and that's my coloredness personified, basically.
That, you know, for me, it's also one of those things, yes, of course, there's these stereotypes of what it means to be colored, and I think it's also a word that's been in the media so much because of Tyler saying that she's colored has caused like a major uproar in the US. And you sort of want to say, hold on, I'm colored. Why does that bother you?
Like this is and this is something we know, like in our communities, like being colored, we understand what it means. She understands what it means. And I think often, like when our stories aren't told, there's so much confusion about it, and that causes people to create these false narratives. So like, as artists and even as just people, everyday people, making sure that we stand in our identity and showcase it and be proud of it every single day is like what we need to do to be able to educate people on like, colored people are here. This is how we navigate. This is our communities. This is what we do. And we do it proudly. And I think that's just like an important thing that we all should be doing as colored people. Like, we shouldn't be stepping back from identity or hiding from those conversations. I think it's important to have them, even if it's difficult or it feels like it's out of your bounds as an academist too. What do you know coloredness to be from your day to day? That's how I wanted to approach this work, all my work, with coloredness doesn't need to be this academic thing that you need to break apart. Coloredness is what we are, what we are walking through this world as. That should be enough as a definition as by itself. But it seems like a lot of people want to turn it into something that's all these other things that it's not.
When you speak about joy, I mean, that is so true. It's an interesting thing as a people. We've been through a lot, but there's always finding that humor in every situation. And I look at these beautiful documentations, I would say, of joy. Tell me about the thought process behind this exhibition.
I think it's exactly what you say, and it's exactly what Faye said earlier. To us, to be colored means to be joyful. It means to be loud and expressive. And for our first body of work, we felt like it was important to highlight that. And the Klopsa is such a relatable community for Cape Town, for the broader South Africa, I think, but specifically for Cape Town. And I think that being our starting point and the Klopsa community allowing us into that space felt like every bit of every element that I love about this life all coming together. And I think that's where it came from. I know Faiz will have a bit more detail, because I would say the essence of the idea and the initial thought process came from Faiz, and then it extended to the collective half and half, and we were able to then at that point put the body of work together.
Maybe you want to add a bit more? I think when I first approached this idea, because we all came together and we were like, we want to do a showcase, let's put ourselves in that world. And then I wanted to do something that I know personally and that we all know personally, something that people can grab onto. And like I was saying, colored identity can be very broad and abstract sometimes. And I think at least in Cape Town, there's one thing that a lot of us grab onto, which is the Klopsa. That's ours. And we know that's ours. So I wanted to be like, I went for something that people can all relate to, they can all reach for it. And the Klopsa was the first thing. And then as I was researching and expanding on it and talking to people, it all just came back to this idea of, this is a space where colored people create. And as artists ourselves, I was like, these creators around us. So whenever I speak to people about this work, I want to showcase their art. Our art is taking photographs of what they do. A lot of those people on the wall, all artists, musicians, they are all artists themselves. And often they are not showcased at all either. So a big part of what I wanted to do was to put them on these walls. That's why all of them are so large and so big. I wanted them to feel empowered in the space so that they are huge above me. These are colored icons, colored heritage icons. A lot of them are big in the Klopsa community even. So as I was researching, I was doing interviews on the subject, I was like, the important stories that need to be told need to come from these people's mouths as well. So that's why we started the documentary aspect of this work also.
So there's different layers to this work.
So it's supposed to be something that expands as well. There's obviously the artist on the wall, and then we have a shorter version of a documentary at the moment. But it's a continuing thing at the moment of just getting their voices out there as well, so that respected people in the community, their voices can be heard from seeing them in their communities saying what they need to say. Rather so than even... We were involved a little bit in the Klopsa through our uncle. He was like big part of it, but we... I wouldn't say we're spokespeople for the Klopsa. They are the spokespeople for the Klopsa. So when we first started, I told Chuck, I need there to be an audio version of this. I need to hear the voices as well. You can't just see them. And I think that was what was important to me, was getting their voices out and showcasing colored creativity. And a lot of times, colored creativity exists in the Klopsa because that's where easily accessible for a lot of colored people.
What did you learn about the Klopsa that you didn't know before?
Yeah, everything.
Tell me more.
Oh, so... going into it, I knew how I felt about it. I knew the top line history of this is something that we've always done.
And maybe share this with us, because I think it's also one of those things we assume our audience know. And we also do have quite a lot of international audience members. So perhaps tell us about the history of the Klopsa.
The Klopsa, basically, it started off from American minstrelsy that came down here. And then through that, obviously we have a heavy history of slavery in the country and such. So the Calypso started off at first from this thing called Tweed and Nivea, which is the 2nd of January. So
my late brother's birthday was on the 2nd of January.
Oh, I so know he has a good time. I know he has a good time.
He always said it was sort of an interesting one because it felt to him like it was his birthday party, even though he didn't ask for it.
Basically, so the story goes where slave owners, they got to celebrate New Year's. They had on the 1st of January, on the last day of the year every year, but slaves still had to work on that day. Then on the 2nd of January, slaves were given off for the one day. And that was the one day where colored people, black people, all enslaved people were able to celebrate and like go out in the streets and enjoy themselves and actually have a day to like not feel as oppressed as they were. And then that's where all the traditions you basically see started. So there's a lot of the music you see, a lot of the outfits you see, they all came from there. But back then it was more so just black and white minstrelsy. So it started from that world of oppression, and then joy was birth from that, basically. They would paint them faces to like hide themselves from their masters so that they can go out in the streets and celebrate. And that's why you see a lot of the talk says about this idea of almost mocking.
But yeah,
it's like funny faces.
That's why I also referred to it when we spoke initially as a tender
riot. Defiance.
Because it's defiant.
A tender riot. Okay, okay. I like you.
And that's in the roots of it. It's in the roots. That's where it starts.
Because actually being joyful was almost defiant. Because you're not expected to have
And that's why I think if joy is so ingrained in what it means to be colored nowadays, because I feel like it's been passed down where it's despite all of this we find the joy. So even back then, so they were painting their faces to hide their identities, to go into the streets to...
I'm learning a lot about Calypso culture too.
It's so important, like I get so passionate about this. And that's where all the more formalized version of the Calypso we see today, that's much more recent. That's maybe like the last 10 to 15 years where it's like there's teams, there's awards and trophies. It's become something that's much more formalized in the community as a space to express. But the heritage comes from just celebration. So all the music, there was a lot of jazz influence. That's why colored people love jazz so much, because it comes from that time of minstrelsy, where jazz was like the main form of music. And now it's moving forward with the whole community. It's a lot of the outfits that you see were before was like cotton suits rather so than the shiny fabrics you see now. So it's so interesting to see how it's developed over all these years. But
do you know why it is shiny fabrics now?
So it's shiny fabrics now because of how many people there are now. So there's such big communities and big teams that a lot of the teams don't have access to these expensive fabrics for their outfits. Yeah. Despite it just being joyful and fun, a lot of them now go to these cheaper fabrics so that they're able to have the seamstress.
For the bigger groups, yes.
It's also why you see them track suits now. A lot of the kids walk in track suits that have the colors of the team with the labels on, because it's about what's accessible to the community, and rather so than this idea of showing off something that's very expensive. That's why you see even like they have the like Gucci prints on there, and I'm like, oh, they you know. And I think it's about that. It's about like celebrating who we are and what we're able to create as colored people. And I always say when I speak about the work is the heritage is so important. It is so important. The history is so important. But a lot of what someone on our team, Mash or Tash Marshall, I pitched it to him at first. I said, I want to do this in the club, sir. What do you think? And then he said something along the lines of, oh, is it going to be another thing that's focused on like the history and the heritage is so heavy? And I'm like, yeah, but that's important. And he said, yes, it's definitely important. But why do all of our stories have to be seeped in that? Have to be drowned in it sometimes? I feel like don't get me wrong, the most important thing. However, that's not how coloredness exists. Do you know what I mean? So he said to me, like, approach it from a place of what you feel coloredness needs to be, or is, sorry, what coloredness is, and that is joy. And why can't we just tell our stories from a joyful point of view, you know?
You know what's quite interesting for me? Mauritius, it's got a huge history of slavery.
Yeah.
And there's a dance there called the Sega. And I didn't realize, I thought it was always these cute, dainty side-to-side steps. I didn't realize that the steps were so small, because usually the slaves had their balls and chains on to keep them enslaved. And so when they were dancing, that was the only range of movement they could actually do. And it is interesting, again, it's become this beautiful trance-like music, and you associate the Sega with Mauritius, and you associate it as this sexy dance. But when you think about it, you realize once again the cruelty of humanity to each other.
And it's birthed from these places of pain, and a lot of times like this, the people that were experiencing this pain, they found a way to express creativity and joy despite it all. Yeah. And I think that's where the two worlds merge for me, spectacle in the struggle is the words we use. So all the spectacle in the struggle is what you want to focus on. So the struggle is there. It's an important part of it.
It's rooted in, I think.
Yes, but the way it's expressed has never been through this, all through this pain. It's always been finding the joy, finding the defiance in it, despite it. It's there, but it's not what we're focusing on. We're using that as a way to showcase us, to release ourselves from a lot of things. And I wanted to focus on this rather so than having this at the forefront, like the past as the forefront, because I feel like we have those stories. A lot of those stories are told, and we obviously tell them through these, but the joy is sometimes never showcased.
It's interesting because Koyo Kwo, the late director of the Zeitzmerker, she spoke a lot about black joy. And I mean, black encapsulates all of us, you know, who... So to me, again, it is wonderful to see the joy in it and not just speaking about the suffering and the oppression. Working with Annalisa as a curator, you both said that you're relatively newbies to this art world. But what was it like working under the curation of Annalisa?
So I've known Annalisa for a really long time. For a large part of it, I've always admired the way that she navigates work, art, being defiant, but at the same time, growing and developing as a person. Because I think for me as well, and that's why Annalisa and I get along so well, is that we value ourselves and our time a lot. And the process of work, of being able to work with Annalisa in this form, I think was another pillar of inspiration for me. She is someone that I look up to. I know our entire team look up to Annalisa. So being able to be guided in this process by someone that you admire, I think was the cherry on top of all of it for me. Just because it's not every day you get to work with someone that you really, really admire. As a person, as an artist, as a creator of things, Annalisa just speaks into what that means for people like us. And being able to be guided through the process, I think, is something that I definitely don't take for granted. I message her every week telling her how much I love her and how much I'm grateful for what she's done for us. And I'm even getting emotional just thinking about it, because it's what I'm trying to do with my work as well. And I see, I said it to Annalisa a few days ago, is that I see a lot of myself in her, and the way we navigate... just because, like, the gravity of the relationship that we have is so personal.
It's trust.
Exactly, and I think that's what I appreciated a lot about the process. Was at the same time we were learning, but I also felt like I was growing as a person, and that's super, super important to me. So Annalisa holds a very special place in my heart, and without her, this wouldn't have been possible.
She guided us through basically most of it. Like, we had the idea first. We shot it with all the guys. We had the digital works with us, and it was sitting on the laptops for so long. And then I spoke to Shaq, and I was like, I want to, like, speak to someone that's in the art world that we know that can help us to, like, showcase this. And she obviously was the first person to come to mind. We had the first meeting with her. We sat down. She said, this worked.
Like, guys, this is a show.
This is a show.
Like, that was the first thing she said when... and all I went to her with was literally just, what do you think of this body of work? And she said, guys, this is a show on its own. And I think from that point, I started viewing the work differently. And I felt that there was an importance to showcase work from colored people that is telling a joyful story about colored people.
And I think what I like with working with Annalisa is that our values are very similar in what we want to do in the creative space, especially in a space like Cape Town, where it's like we work a lot in the film industry, and a lot of the film industry is not, you don't see a lot of people like us sometimes, or you do see us, but we're in specific roles that you more so see us in or supposed to be in. So now Annalisa is obviously a trailblazer in the art world. She is a black female curator doing all of this.
Curator and creator.
And creator, literally both. And she uplifts other POC artists, black artists, colored artists. And that's what we try to do in our work within the film space. So meeting up with her at first was perfect, basically, where it's like, she wants to uplift us. And now we have a show in a gallery. It's still surreal to this day. And it feels just like everything went perfectly, where it's the visions are aligned, basically. And it's just, it's been such a seamless process. It's really been such a seamless process.
What has the reception been like in terms of the broader art world?
Very, very positive. I don't think I could have imagined the feeling and the actual response that we received. The project itself, I think, is very much in its infancy. So I'm trying not to put too much pressure on us as artists to take the next step and do the next thing and move it from here to wherever we go next. And the response, I think, has encouraged that. But at the same time, we're trying to take it at a pace that feels manageable for us. And I think the impact that it's had, more so, I would say, within the colored and black community, which is more important to us rather than the impact it's had in the art world. I think we spoke about it near the beginning of the conversation, just in terms of like the art world not feeling accessible to a lot of colored and black people. And I think this has bridged that gap. So another very emotional story that I feel attached to is...
Oh, I love a story.
Seeing my family and my cousins and extended family, friends show up in a gallery space for the first time is a feeling that I don't think I would... I can't compare it to anything else. And the first time they walked into the gallery and it was our show, I think that was such a beautiful moment to experience. So I think it's less so about how the art world has received it and more so about how people like us have received it.
That day was so emotional. It was on opening day, my dad, I saw him tearing up. I was like, my dad's tearing up because of art. I was like, this is so fun. Like, we had aunts, uncles, my baby cousin was running around, and yet again, we invited all these people because that's who it's for. It's for our community, is the thing. So it was like an emotional day for everyone, I think. And it was just like, I felt like all the spaces of my life coming together, and it was just, and then we had so much fun. We served Cassisters, everyone, like...
Coffee Cassisters.
Yeah.
Grandma.
You know, our grandma made the Cassisters also. She was cooking the night before, basically making all the Cassisters ready, like making them in the morning, like delivering it.
What it'd be like with the perfume, with the coconut.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was so fun having the whole family involved. My dad installed the TV that you saw the documentary on. Our mom was busy draping fabric. So it felt like a whole family in there. And obviously, we work together a lot. So it's like... It felt very community-based, and that was important to me when making the work, because that's an important part of our culture, I think. But yeah, and I think, yeah, it's just, I'm just feel so much joy about it.
I feel the joy about it.
I can geek about it all the time. It's so good.
Thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I really appreciate it. And yeah, I encourage people to come and see it. Until when is it up here?
I think it's up until the end of the month. It was... The show was
extended.
Yeah, so the show was supposed to end, I think, a week or two ago, but I think it's being extended for another few weeks. So please come and check it out.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for bringing us Club.
Of course.